Sunday, June 23rd at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl will feature composer, vibraphonist, and band leader, Roy Ayers. Find out more about Roy Ayers before people started calling him the godfather of acid jazz. That's Sunday, June 23rd at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl's name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones. Our guest for this evening is Roy Ayers, and I have company this evening. Hi, Hank.
Hi, Joyce.
Hank Williams is in the studio with me. Yay, our web guy and associate producer. Stay tuned. Roy Ayers on Sugar in My Bowl coming up next. Oh, did I say my name's Joyce Jones? Stay tuned.
Some steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go.
By the way, I forgot to mention that the next song is a premiere. Jessica Care Moore, the poet, writer Jessica Care Moore, has a new release coming out on Tuesday or Wednesday of this week. And we're going to premiere it here. Stay tuned. It features Roy Ayers and Jose James.
When you are brown, when you are brave, when you walk over glass like water, when you know your eyes are borrowed like time, when you peel off your skin for the very first time, fear is never in style in the Mecca of the blue. Fear never lives in the gut of the new. You want homes, and I just want to build my home. You want home, and I just want love in my hands. You want home, and I'm not interested in fans. You love me inside my magic, And I just want you to see you already have him. It isn't the telling when someone asks. It is the way he holds the glass, licks the surface, examines without touching. It is the way our energy takes over rooms. It is the subtle conversation. It is the freedom of emancipated language. It is the words scribbled inside my skin. It is the curve of the line, the beauty of the lie. Stories passed down through generations of pain and pride, ocean and tide. Water remembers, water returns. African mermaids blending with dark sand. It is the danger of the dance. The upright heart of the bass, the dice rolled from the cymbal tees, the last laugh in fiction to this moment. Where else did I put it? Don't know where to put it. Place it, bury it deep in my chest, back of my throat. Where should I hide it on this stage? Should I give it to you? Here is my honesty, my work undressed. Legs stretched across the piano, traded like cattle, raped like animal, left for dead, stuffed dry from inspiration. In love with the idea of living long enough to simply write about it. Push it out my body and watch my son slowly grow into it. You said you wanted home. Now what you gonna do with it? Huh? Etta. Abby. Whitney. Billy. Nina. Phyllis. How much time you got? I'm a body of clocks. I'm the master of mics. I'm the metaphor for survival. I'm the gold they use to build their churches. A beautiful idea to flirt with, but who shall I marry? The moonlight, the sunrise, the white dove, the wolf, an eastern wind, this music, a prayer. How many babies we gonna make inside a song? Which revolution, which nation shall we rule? The island of the spirit world, the beauty of the believers, the carpenter, the men who build the dreamer, placed you on the front line of their planet. One day, the stars will line up between breath and ink and voice, between reality and choice.
I'm going to get started.
Okay. Officially. I'm here with you. Look at you, got everything.
I'm not everything, but I got a lot of things.
There's all of them.
Wow. Wow. You have something current that you're going to give me?
Yes, I am. Okay. King of the Vibes is my latest album.
King of the Vibes, yes. I read about that.
Yeah.
I read something about a documentary, too. Is that right?
A young man is doing a documentary on me. All he's right. from San Francisco.
When is that going to be ready?
Not until maybe the latter part of the summer. Not until October, November.
Okay.
It's the
Project.
Project, right?
Yes, royersproject.com. That's where people can find out about the documentary.
Why did I call myself King of the Vibes? Because almost all the other vibes are dead or are sick.
Okay.
Well, I don't mean to say it like that, but that's what it is.
The ones who had been around when you were...
Like Lionel Hampton was around Milt Jackson, you know.
Right, right.
They're kind of like the bosses of the vibe form.
Right.
And probably Milt Jackson was the most beautiful vibist of all. His touch, his feel... Incredible. It's unique.
Well, Bobby Hutcherson's still here.
Bobby's still alive. Yeah. He's got emphysema.
Right.
He's not
right.
doing
but
well.
But he's still playing.
He still plays, but he doesn't play long.
That's true.
And he's at my age. Well, I'm 72. I think he's maybe a year younger than me. But he started way earlier than I did. Mm-hmm. And he was playing with Al.
Gray.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you. You're wonderful. He started with Al Green.
Uh-huh. I had read somewhere that you had actually, you were sort of under his tutelage.
Well,
is there some truth? Well, he was.
No. I would say that's true.
Okay.
But I think without his knowledge, mm-hmm. and definitely without my knowledge, I guess he was training me because I was listening, mm-hmm. and he was already performing. Mm-hmm. And in the early days, as a matter of fact, when I was in high school, his piano player played with me right after I left high school, mm-hmm. Ethan McElroy. So that was exciting to me because I had. The piano player that worked with Bobby,
right.
because we knew about Bobby, when I say we, the musicians that were in L.A.,
mm-hmm.
you know. But Dizzy started way before then in Los Angeles. We used to share it, he and I and Dave Pike, another vibist. Bobby is from Pasadena, California, which is not far from Los Angeles. And, of course, in my youth, coming out of high school, I was very much aware of Bobby's performing,
mm-hmm.
but we never got together till later on after that, after I left high school and started shedding and playing with different bands, working with Gerald Wilson's big band, mm-hmm. and Curtis Amy Sextet and Jack Wilson Quartet, which was really a wonderful experience for me. And then I played with Hampton Hawes and Phineas Newborn Jr. Oh, mm-hmm. those are incredible things to look back at, these geniuses that I work with. And it really makes me feel so honored to have had that opportunity. Thank you.
also, you know, your beginning phases of the music. And a lot of people don't seem to know that about you now. They look at, you know,
they don't know about my bebop experience.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
True. Right. And I've done very well in the commercial aspect of music. As a matter of fact, I have a new album that's coming out. This is something that I did a long time ago. It features Rick James.
Oh, really?
Right. And Rick was a good friend of mine. We talked. We didn't really hang out, but we talked. And he's a very intelligent young man.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that he did that wasn't intelligent is he overdid drugs,
right,
and he involved in drugs.
What is it that you had done with Rick James?
Performed. We did an album. But he was very much influenced by me. I recorded on one of his albums. It was with Motown. He had four women come and surround me because Rick was a real super freak. By that, I mean he just loved to mess with women. And
right.
That was his life, women and drugs. But he was intelligent. What I mean by that, he could speak about anything. He was versatile, and he knew a lot. He was an incredible person.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was high, he was stupid. He was just stupid.
Sure.
He couldn't control it. And it controlled him. And it killed him, unfortunately. But he had one of the guys in the Temptations was his uncle. And Rick got a deal with Motown. And he sold a lot of records. It was incredible, his career. He had some very big hits.
Mm-hmm.
He recorded with me three songs, one of which we sang together. And the other two, one was Everybody Loves the Sunshine, a song I wrote. And Say You Will, a song that the other guy that worked with me, Rex Rideout, wrote. But incredible. Most of the guys that were in my band, I had to show them how to play the bass. I had to show them how to play the piano. These were young musicians.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't understand the seriousness of a performance. I was dead against drugs because I had a sister. I had three sisters, but I had one sister that was really very Thomasina. She's 84 years old now, Thomasina Pleasant, and she lives in Los Angeles. She's retired. But my sister always spoke about leaving drugs alone. So that made it kind of special to me, kind of because she stayed on my case, don't mess with those drugs because they will mess you up. And generally speaking, everybody that I know that mess with drugs is dead or just disappeared. And I'm 72 now. They're really a bad thing, really bad for everybody. It's serious. But, you know, basically, no one, I mean musicians, no one ever talks about it. No one ever speaks about it. Nobody ever speaks about leaving drugs alone. It seems to be something that is underground, and it's something that happens with a whole lot of musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I'm not just saying musicians do that, because generally speaking, people do drugs.
Yeah.
People in general,
yeah.
You know, and drugs are made plentiful for everybody. So there's no conversation about it. So therefore, there are so many people that are affected by the drugs, and that generally die or get serious illnesses.
Right.
It's a horrible thing for people to experience and to know about it and to know the people that have experienced it that I have been around, like Rick.
Like Rick James.
I mean, I saw him after his problem that he went to jail.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I went to see him, and he was doing a gig at a small club here in New York. And I think the gig was a small room, meaning maybe he was making about $10,000. But Rick...
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Rick was making, you know, $40,000, $50,000,
$60,000,
yeah. $100,000 a night.
Stadiums.
Yeah, he did Madison Square Garden.
Garden.
I played with him at Madison Square
okay.
Garden. Oh, man, it was something.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so obsessed with marijuana and other drugs that he said, I'm going to smoke this marijuana, and if the police come up here, we're going to turn this mother out.
Mm. So, he said this on the stage.
Yeah, and I just stood over there on my vibes. I said, please don't say anything to me, you know. But I was saying that to myself. Well,
right.
Don't say anything to me about it because I don't want to have anything to do with saying. The police were everywhere, but
right.
Nobody did anything.
Right.
But he was just tripping, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's part of the trip.
Right.
It was nice to be around him because he was so jovial
mm-hmm.
and happy and spirited. And when I did the recording with him, I was there with Cookie Keith, who used to work for Motown. And Rick James said, I don't like that motherfucker. Talking about Prince.
Oh,
wait a
no.
minute. So nobody had bought Prince up. And I said, well, why are you saying that, man? He said, because I don't like him. I said, but wait a minute. You're Rick James. I'm Roy Ayers. Prince is not even here. Let's just forget about talking about him. Let's get this stuff together.
Uh-huh.
He said, you're right. He hated Prince.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Prince did to him. I never did find
insecure.
That.
It was just,
yeah,
he was
I think
you're
very, very much so,
yeah.
I guess, in the way he was acting. I said, my God.
So I actually want to go back to when you said how you had to train your musicians how to...
Oh, yeah.
What, are you talking about Ubiquity?
Yeah, well, no, before this is before Ubiquity.
Okay.
This is Roy Ayers, still in high school, Jefferson High School. Sam Brown was my teacher. Sam Brown was my harmony teacher and music teacher. He was great. He also worked in Board of Education with my sister, the one that's 84 years old now.
Okay.
I just found out that he worked with her. I didn't know, because she didn't tell me before. Mm-hmm. Anyway, at the time I was in high school, guys were, they were like in the beginning stages of, they want to perform music, but they had not developed their skills on the bass or the, and the drums and different things. They wanted to play and they could play, but they weren't really ready. And a lot of guys during those times, especially right after high school, a lot of guys were into drugs. And there was no understanding by any of these individuals about what to do with drugs. And so they would overdo it.
Yeah.
They would overdo it with Red Devils and Bennies and pot. Oh,
and
we're
so
talking about,
of course it affected their
1959, 60s, we just out of high school. Right. Oh my God, these guys were all in experimental stages, and we played a gig at a place called the M Club. Oh, we had a gig. It was going to be for 3 weeks or something like that on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And the first night, Fred Lito, my conga player, he's playing. We're all playing, cooking. The house is packed with people, and Fred Lito decides to play, and fall out.
What? In the middle of playing?
Oh, right. And the stage was in the center of the club.
Oh, no.
And the bar was outside of the stage. It was so, so funny. So we had to carry him out of the club, because he was knocked out.
Oh, gosh.
And set him in his car, and we played the gig.
Okay. I was going to ask, did you finish the set?
We played the gig, and he came after we finished. Oh, what time do we hit tomorrow? I said, we've been fired. We don't hit tomorrow. The club want to fire us
because we were
unprofessional. That's not professional. That's not. I didn't even think about that was going to happen. I had no idea. But I learned from that, you know, that, oh, I was so emotional at the time because I was, like, set against drugs so much. And that's when I decided that I would start playing with professional musicians. And that's why I started working with Curtis Amy, Jack Wilson, you know, Harold Land, all the guys, all
how
those
did
great.
You, how did you wind up around them? Did you just
those musicians?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I went to their gigs and sat in. I sat in with Curtis Amy, and Curtis said it was cool. But I got the gig after Bobby had left with Al, and then there was an opening, and there was nobody else there to do it but me.
Yeah.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. What we're listening to right now, who I'm talking over, is Curtis Amy, Bells and Horns, and Roy Ayers is in there. We'll hear from him soon. And let's see, before that we heard, it was Jack Wilson, the Jack Wilson Quartet, and what was that? You know, the playlist is up. It's on the Sugar in My Bowl site, sugarinmybowl.org, sugainmybowl.org. It is up. Hank is putting it up. as we listen. yeah, we heard Kilo, K-I-L-O, from Ramblin'. And let's see, before that we heard from the King of the Vibes, Roy Ayers, we heard E-Funk, E.F-U-N-K, E-Funk. And before that we heard Jessica Caremore, a selection from her upcoming release. It is, what was it again? Give Me Poems?
You Want Poems.
Oh, let's try that again. What was it?
You Want Poems.
Okay. And that was Jessica Caremore. Oh, and here's Roy Ayers. We're going to be still. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl. Roy Ayers is our guest. Hank Williams in the studio. And my name's Joyce Jones. Stay tuned.
That was perfect with Curtis, because
right.
Bobby played with Curtis.
Right, exactly.
Bobby Hutcherson.
Right.
And all was interesting. And then, of course, I played all around L.A., and I played with everybody. Everybody knew me there. And when Herbie Mann called me, that was great, because I came to New York in 1966 to work with the Herbie Mann group. And Herbie was a wonderful leader, a really nice guy, and he really knew what to do with musicians. And we had guys in the band like Buster Williams and,
yes.
and Bruno Carr on drums, Buster Williams on bass.
Well, on two of your recordings, what? Daddy Bug.
Yeah, Herbie produced that.
He produced both of them. And Virgo Vibes.
Yeah, and Stone Soul Picnic.
Yes, and Stone Soul.
Herbie Picnic. Hancock was on that. Those albums.
That's right. And my first percussion instructor, Juma Santos.
Ooh, Juma, you know Juma?
Juma was my first percussion instructor.
And Juma died.
Yes, he did.
I just heard this 6 months ago.
That
he had died.
He died the same year that Max Roach died.
Wow.
But yeah, he was on there, and it actually says on which recording is it? Daddy Bug, I think. You play congas.
I mess with him. I could play just enough to play around. Thank you. That album that I just gave you, which is called
He's Coming.
He's Coming.
Mm-hmm.
Features Juma Santos,
mm-hmm.
Shonda Hewitt, Hubert Laws,
uh-huh.
Sonny Fortune, different artists that are so incredible.
You have Sonny Chirac on on Memphis Underground.
Yeah,
that's the one.
The Herbie Mann album.
That's right.
Matter of fact, if you look at this picture right here,
uh-huh.
and you see all the people playing Herbie and Miroslav Vitos, and,
right.
and I'm behind it.
behind the
yeah, you
partition.
You might can see my arms or something. You're horrible cameraman didn't take my picture.
No, I was looking at this picture. I was like, why can't I see? Because he's behind the.
But working with Herbie Mann was really a wonderful experience for me.
How did that happen? How did you
I was in L.A. cooling out,
mm-hmm.
and Reggie Workman was the bass player with Herbie.
Exactly.
And Reggie called me and said, hey, Roy, Herbie needs a bad player.
Oh, wow.
I said, right. I'll come down and set in. Boom, 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 boom.
Uh-huh.
And I came down to the Lighthouse. That was a club that was playing at. Mm-hmm. It was packed with people. And everybody in the audience knew me because I was home, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so I came and I played the gig. And,
uh-huh.
and of course, I... Herbie asked me, he said, hey, you want to join, how would you like to join my band? I said, we ain't left yet. And so the rest is history. I left at Herbie Mann. It seemed like my career really started to blossom. I became internationally known because I was doing records, and Herbie produced these three records on Atlantic.
Right.
Oh, he was a wonderful leader. He was wonderful in my life, you know. But Herbie was a wonderful guy.
Well, you mentioned Reggie Workman. I saw him last weekend, too.
Right. He had a bald head, right?
Yes, he does.
Yes! When I saw him, they were giving me an honor in Harlem.
Oh, he had hair when you were back in the day?
Oh, yeah. Hey, Reggie, everything changes, you know.
Yeah.
It's so amazing. But we used to have some good conversations with Reggie because Reggie is intellectual and an interesting person.
Yeah. He's a great bassist.
And a great musician.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. And you're right. And
a former Sugar Mama Bowl guest.
You have a show? You have a show? I didn't know
this
you
is what you're going to be on, man.
When?
Sunday.
Oh, the show on radio?
Yes.
Oh, okay. But I was thinking that you were doing a show like video or something.
Oh, no.
Well, that's your next step.
No, it isn't.
You watch. When you get it, I'm going to say, didn't I tell you? To have something to look forward to, right?
Yeah,
I told you were going to be in television. Yeah, I mean, right. Here I am with you on television. That's wonderful. There are so many other great experiences. I mean, I think about it. During the time that I was with Herbie Mann, I met some wonderful people like George Wing, who produced the Newport Jazz Festival, the Cool Jazz Festival,
mm-hmm.
so many different festivals all over the world. But the thing that's really sad now is how I can see how they are trying to eliminate jazz
mm.
and eliminate jazz artists. are jazz-oriented artists.
How so?
It seems though some of the record companies are not recording jazz artists. And if they are, there's not too many jazz radio stations anymore. This is real jazz.
Right.
And even smooth jazz is being eliminated. And I like some of the players that are playing smooth jazz. Like, I like Kenny G. I like
what he's...
Yeah, because he's a fine musician. If you listen to it,
no, as a musician, he's a fine musician.
Yeah,
Some of his compositions are like, seriously.
But I like his playing. I've heard him. He's got a very good concept,
mm-hmm.
And he's not like some of these guys that can't play. I won't even mention them. But I think that the industry is kind of losing it as far as the people that are producing the records and also putting them out on CD as well as playing them on record, playing on radio stations.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be a process of elimination. They're eliminating America's probably only true art form. Our greatest ambassadors to goodwill have been people like Louis Armstrong and Lionel Hampton, just to mention two.
And Dizzy Gillespie.
And Duke Ellington, and so many of them. Great artists. And Leonard Feather, who will produce my first album, the West Coast Vibes album, and also the author and writer of the Encyclopedia of Jazz, Volumes 1 and 2 and 3. He passed on now.
Uh-huh.
But Leonard Feather said the first real American he met was Louis Armstrong.
Uh-huh.
He said, and if Americans are like Louis Armstrong, then I love America. That's what he said. The spirit. And Louis Armstrong was fantastic. Me and Buster Williams sat down with Louis Armstrong when I was with Herbie Mann. We both found out who Louis Armstrong was because we knew nothing about him.
Uh-huh.
He was a genius. He was very, very intelligent. It's like Bradford Marcellus said to Art Blakey, hey, man, you don't have to time out to these white folks. And Art Blakey said, hey, listen, let me tell you something, young blood. You don't know what a lot of people went through to get to where we got to today.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff. So Art Blakey was a genius, too.
That was mentioned in that jazz series.
Right.
Yeah.
I hear you.
That messed me up when I saw that.
Right, I hear you.
I was like, really?
Right.
Like, was he really, like, calling Art Blakey on the carpet here?
Right, exactly. Exactly. Well, he didn't know, you know.
I know.
He was just trying. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we all live and learn. Right?
Yeah.
But there are some things that are changing out here, and I hope that they can change it back to what it should be, mm-hmm. and get a lot of these creative artists to play in the instruments, or getting a lot of artists that are out here to play instruments, because and also recording it, because they can't just stop the creativity. So that's one of my main concerns.
take this moment to let you know that you're presently listening to Ricardo's Dilemma from Roy Ayer's first release, West Coast Vibes. And before that, what are we here? From He's Coming, Fire Weaver. And before that, we heard Daddy Bug. I really love that. That was the song that was used on the promo, Roy Ayer's release. And that's the title cut, Daddy Bug. And I've got Hank Williams here. Hi, Hank.
Good evening, Joyce.
And Hank Williams is putting up the playlist.
As we speak.
Yes. And you are listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, Sugar in My Bowl, and WBAI.org on the web. Stay tuned for more Roy Ayers. Now.
One is Rula Melodic and one is Afi CD.
Right. What are you doing with those?
Oh, there's so much thievery in this world that people know how to steal in a clever way, you know, without people knowing what they're doing.
What do you mean?
CDs. The internet. Prince made a statement. Prince said, the internet don't work. It doesn't work. Don't work. It's not working for him. And he never really elaborated on it. But the statement itself, the internet don't work or it doesn't work, says a lot.
And what does that mean for you?
Well, it means something to me. I believe that a lot of the companies, whoever they are, distribution companies, the people that press the records, or at least the people that sell the records, are not giving accurate statements. And a lot of people, a lot of artists know about it, but nobody's saying anything about it. It's crazy.
So how does that affect your label?
Oh, that affects everybody. I mean, everybody, white and black, whoever they are.
No, but I'm talking about how does it affect your music?
Yeah, well, it affects everybody's label. Well, excuse me. It doesn't necessarily affect Columbia or Warner Brothers or Capitol, or you name all the labels that are out there, because they're pressing the records. You know, it's interesting. No artist has a deal with the record companies, to my knowledge, where they can audit the pressing plans. They only say, hey, let me see your papers. And the record companies give them the statement. Mm-hmm. And the statement says what the record company is on it. He says, that's how many we sold. So they have to trust the word of the record company.
Right.
And I believe that they have a lot of thieves in there, you know, people that are giving false information.
But we're talking about your labels.
Yeah, okay.
Isn't that different?
Well, I'm just trying to say this so I can sell my records directly to the people instead of going through
the distribution.
Right.
Okay.
Because I believe that all the distributors, they don't give you accurate accounting.
Okay.
And that not only you, but everybody.
Right.
I don't believe they give them accurate accounting. It's so easy to steal, you know. Mm. You're selling three records. You got three records, and you can press it up and sell it and get the money for it. And then you say, well, I'll just put this one over here for hard times.
Mm.
Then I'll put this one over here for our time. And then I'll give this one to the artist. There you go.
Mm.
So these are the things that they do. And they know this is what they do.
Right.
It's the easiest thing in the world. When you sell records, you can see how you can cheat because you can cheat.
Mm.
I can cheat myself.
Right.
It's easy to cheat because you just say... If you sold 10,000 records, you can say, well, we only sold 2,000, which is how we've done. We're talking about money here, a lot of money.
Right.
And people will say, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. So why can't the artist monitor the pressing plan? Why? So why not?
Yeah.
I mean, the pressing plan presses up a certain amount of records.
Right.
This is something that's affecting a lot of people's lives.
Well, the prison plant, isn't that run by the record company?
Thank you.
Well, see.
Thank you very much.
No, but seriously, I mean.
Yeah, that's serious. I'm saying thank you. That's right.
Okay.
It is owned by the prison.
So we were talking about your two record companies.
Right.
So you own the pressing on your two companies, right?
And right now, I don't want to release any records that have nothing to do with another artist. I just want to release records that have to do with me.
Okay, why is that?
Because I can cheat myself.
Okay. You don't want to feel like you're cheating.
I'm not going to cheat other artists.
Right, right.
Because I know artists would hate to be cheated.
Of course.
So I have my own record company. And generally speaking, I think all artists should have their own record company. Think about it.
Mm.
Should have an accounts payable situation where they have an account with a bank and people send in their credit card and they can get paid.
Well, the way the record companies are going these days, people are creating their own labels. And, you know, people are releasing
Thank you very much. That's what all artists have to do. But the bad thing is when a lot of artists go with other people, and other people are distributors. They collect the money, and they're not going to pay you. They're not going to pay you what you're supposed to. They're going to pay you what they think you should get.
Well, that seems to be the issue. Actually creating the release isn't as much of an issue as it is getting it distributed.
Right. But you don't have to get it. You can distribute it yourself.
Well, a lot of people are distributing it through their websites.
Exactly. Well, that's right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And so the public needs to know that. In my case, they can go to royers.net or royers.com. Check this out. Somebody already had my name, royers.com.
You had to get it back?
My daughter got it back, right. Wow. I don't know who it was. I've done 86 albums, but more than that.
Right.
But I've done 86 albums.
And I'm actually looking at them, people.
Right.
right in front of me.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
But it sounds like something that's going to be nice. It's going to be a sequence of interviews with many different celebrities, like people like Erykah Badu and other people, just got different people out here. So it's really nice. So it's a nice thing to have done on oneself.
Which was the first recording that you made the change? Was it Ubiquity? Was that where you started to
That's when I really started. Yeah, and also I started to really gain a wider recognition as far as who I am and where I am and what I'm doing.
It's like your own voice.
Right. Yeah. Roy is Ubiquity, right? Of course, you know, ubiquity means the state of being omnipresent, being everywhere at the same time. And I always have said, I can be everywhere at the same time if everyone has one of my albums.
That's right.
If everybody got it,
right.
Then I'm everywhere.
That's
right. So it was just a very slick gimmick and way to promote it.
Well, I understand that you had a manager at the time that came
Myrna up. Williams? Myrna Williams, yes.
Yes, yes.
She's the one
that came up with the...
Yeah, Myrna Williams came up with the name.
Yeah.
Myrna Williams, she's a Libra. She lives in California.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she's a good person.
Uh-huh.
And she did a good job when she was with my band. Matter of fact, she produced that first album, Red, Black, and Green.
I thought you have it right here. That's it.
She did. She produced that album along with the president of Polydor, Jerry Schoenbaum.
Oh, okay. Humming in the sun.
Showing up for everyone. Edwin Bird song?
Edwin Bird song is a writer, singer, composer that worked with me for many years in the early years of Roy Ayers in New York City. Very close associate in the writing, music, and composition, and being in the business. We shared a lot of moments together in the industry. And he's from Los Angeles. He went to a rival school called Fremont High School, and I went to Jefferson High School in Los Angeles around the same time. And Edwin Birdsong moved to New York. When I came to New York to be with Herbie Mann, he was already here doing whatever he was doing. And we got together and we started writing together. And, of course, a lot of his music and ideas and also collaborations with me. And then he eventually signed to Polygram as an artist as well. And he was such a truthful person that he would tell the people at Polydor, including the president, you guys are not doing it right. You have to do it like this, and you have to start producing Roy's record like this, and you have to start producing my records like this. And they didn't like him. And I would talk to him about it. I would say, Bert, you just have to change the way your strategy is with these people because they feel like you're threatening. Because the president himself told him, why can't you be like Roy? It was cool, but what it was a drag because I wasn't disturbing anything. But Birdsong was disturbing a lot of people in promotion and advertising and marketing and every area. He was a very inquisitive man. Edwin Birdsong is a Leo, and he was very inquisitive and very sharp. He wasn't a dummy. But Edwin Birdsong wrote many songs with me. We shared and both had our own publishing company. His mother and father were retired ministers, so he was very much in tune with the church. What really separated us from each other, he wanted to move back to California. But he was married. When he got married, I wasn't married. I had been married before. My ex-wife and I divorced. But he got married, and his wife's name was Michelle. And so we had a company together called Air Bird Music. And he started a company called Michelle Birdsong Music. So when he did that, he said he's going to split this fellowship with her. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to start a company called Roy Ayers Ubiquity. And that was the beginning of our breakup. And then he decided to move back to Los Angeles and stay there. So I believe that's where he is now. I believe he's doing work with Stevie Wonder. And because when he was here in New York, he was taking care of Stevie Wonder's recording studio that he had here in New York. So Birdsong also became very popular and close to Stevie Wonder. So that's what happened. But on most of my early stuff on Polydor, Birdsong wrote on it, on most of the stuff. So he's somebody that will be missed back in New York, but I really appreciate his contribution to my music.
Oh, and Dee Dee Bridgewater's on this one.
Oh, my God.
Tear to a Smile, excuse me.
Yeah, she is. That's all right. She did. She is on that.
Have you seen her? She's on Coffee.
Have you seen her?
Yeah. She was a guest on Sugar in My Bowl.
Oh, my God.
She said she saw
you. She's a Gemini. She's wonderful.
She said she saw you that day when you were in Central Park, which is what I want to talk to you about with the Jazz Mafia.
Oh, that's a funny set.
Talk to me about that. What happened?
That's a gig that these people I just talked to, they booked that. The thing that was wrong with that gig is that I was on the stage with a group of musicians and people that really wanted to take my popularity and they kind of step in front of it, you know, like to showcase their act.
Exactly.
And it looked so unprofessional.
It did.
It was horrible. Bogarted.
They bogarted your popularity.
Right, but these guys, these other guys that booked it, they didn't care what they did. They didn't have any kind of idea. And so I have to be careful of them. So I'm not exclusive with them anymore.
Okay, good. So because that was, I didn't, see, I had a problem with that show. I'm just going to tell you now.
Sure,
I had a problem.
Told you
I told her about I had a problem with
you
it.
You were there.
Me and my partner were there.
Oh,
we
I didn't know you
were so angry with what happened.
Yeah. There the way was, it looked so unprofessional.
Well, look, this is what happened. There was like 90 minutes of all of that, whatever production they were doing, flying all over the place and whatever. And then they finally, because it was supposed to be a birthday celebration for you in Central Park.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
No, it was supposed to be a birthday celebration. Eventually, you got on the stage and you did Everybody Loves the Sunshine or Run It Away, I think. But
two or three songs.
Right. And by the time you did Everybody Loves the Sunshine, these two people, Grinch or something. I'm like, what is this? They came out and said, be a father, be a father, be a father to your child. What did that have to do with you?
N.O.G. and the Bulldogs, right?
It was some, yeah.
I know.
It was some I and the Grinch. That's
right.
What they said
right.
Their
okay.
name was.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm totally taken, but I'm glad the gig is over. I'm glad it's over because that has never happened to me before. But
I was stunned.
It sharpened me up. It made me realize I can't afford to get on those kind of sets.
Yeah,
I'll be on those kind of sets. I didn't even know who these guys were. They did pay me for it. That was the only good part about it. It was done very unprofessional.
It was scary. We left. We couldn't stay.
It was unprofessional, right? You said, how can they do this?
Done.
How can they do that to their brother?
Exactly.
Right.
It's like, this is Roy Ayers they're talking about here. How is this happening?
Right. So we millions of records to people, and all of a sudden now.
And it's like, who is this Jazz Mafia? Who are they?
It's similar to what, it may I say it like this, it's very similar to what the Republicans are trying to do to Obama. Yep, very similar. But I'm trying to tell you. I mean, think of all the stuff that they're canceling that Obama's trying to do. Just think of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing to the American public. The sad thing about that is that it's being allowed. In the years I've been here on the planet, I've never seen any president treated like that. Mm. I've never seen anybody treated like that. It's horrible. It's horrible to see these things. Yeah. I'm not very political, but to see what they're doing to this man.
Wait a minute. Now, that I'm going to have to call you on. You say you're not very political. I've listened to some of your past recordings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are some that, I don't know, maybe you don't call it political. But right. In your expressing pride.
I don't get involved in the political process of with the presidency.
Oh,
stuff.
I see.
That's,
okay.
That's what I meant. That's what I meant.
Okay.
But I mean, I guess everything, Fela Kuti from Nigeria, he said everything is politics.
Exactly.
Everything is the food we eat,
right.
The road we walk.
Right.
Everything is related to politics.
Right.
So maybe I am political. But at the same time, when I see what's happening, I say, how can the government allow these things to happen? I'd never realized the power that the Congress has over the president. Because what happened is when Bush was in office, he agreed to do certain things with the Republicans, and that's how it was set up. That's why it's kind of like lopsided now.
Well, the Congress was in league. They were both Republicans.
Right!
You know, yeah, like
they set up a lot of things that are screwed up.
Right, right.
For especially people in poverty or people that are not filthy rich.
Right. Right.
You know, so it works toward to helping the rich people and also the corporations.
Right.
The tax systems, all these things.
Right.
So these people have maneuvered things to make it work for people.
So that's how it felt working with Jazz Mafia.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
That was horrible.
So.
Anyway.
Everybody Loves the Sunshine. You know, when I saw that cover.
Of the yellow, yeah.
That was just, I mean, first off, there's a man in a yellow T-shirt.
Right. And look like sunshine all around me.
Exactly. Is it just glowing?
That's right.
everybody loves the sunshine. Sunshine. Everybody loves the sunshine. Sunshine. Folks get down in the sunshine. Sunshine. Folks get proud in the sunshine.
It was one of my big albums. Probably, probably it is the biggest album I've ever had, biggest song I've ever had. Mm. The most sample song is Everybody Loves the Sunshine. People like 50 Cent and Tribe Called Quest, Brand Nubian, just so many names. I didn't even, when I did this song, I didn't even know these names. And it's more popular than ever. I have over 40 people that have sampled it. They sampled. The songs have been hit 40 times with people.
Because they've sampled
them. Yeah, like Mary J. Blige. I'm just saying, it just they sell so many records. I've never had any even gold or platinum. I got 2 platinum records.
Lifeline, we're running away on it.
Right. It's a big album for me.
Yeah.
What the company did is Polydor. They put the album out, and they also put out a 12-inch. And the 12-inch was a long playing cut of the song called Running Away, Doobie Doo Run Run Run. And they sold a little bit over 400,000. It takes 500,000 of the album to go gold. I mean, this is what they said. You know?
Okay.
They said, well, wow, we messed up because we sold 300,000 of the single, the 12-inch single. Just one song on the disc. Because
right.
At that time, they were releasing albums. So that's what they said. Generally speaking, you don't really know with these record companies, you don't know what's happening until you get to a certain point of being in the business, until you learn the business. And by the time you learn everything, it's time that they kick you off the label.
Right.
They get new people. And the new people don't know anything about the record business as far as putting records out themselves and having their own system set up to get paid, and they just kind of slowly fade away. And I'll say that it's kind of crazy because a lot of artists are out here and they've had a lot of record sales, and unfortunately they can't reap benefits off of it because they don't know the business.
Have you ever had any of your recordings shelved? Did the company ever hold on to them and not release them?
No, because I've got all my masters. I own all the masters. This is the stuff that I did for Roy Ayers Production Company.
Okay.
But everything that I did for them, they own those. But the only ones I did for myself, I own those. That's why two of my albums came out on labels over in the UK. One was called Roy Ayers Virgin Ubiquity 1 and Virgin Ubiquity 2.
What was that all about? Tell me about that.
Those are unreleased songs that I did when I was on Polygram. I own it because those are songs that I didn't want to put on my label. But the company owned them. The label didn't own them. I owned them.
Okay.
They could, if they wanted to, they could say they own them, but it'd go to court. But, you know.
But they're yours.
They're mine, yeah. The only thing that's theirs is what I gave them.
Right.
They said, look, there's time to do a new album. Here's your check. Boom, 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 boom. And we do it. Everything was cool.
How did you get coffee?
It was funny. When they asked me at that time, but 1973, they said, Roy, the president, Jerry Schoenbaum, he said, Roy, can you do a soundtrack to a movie? I said, of course. I had never done a soundtrack in my life. I said, of course I can do a soundtrack to a movie, of course. They said, well, this girl, Pam Grist, she's done a movie, didn't need music to it. They flew me out to California, met the people at American International Pictures. We talked about it. They gave me a moviola. That's a machine you use. And it was simple. Just
take
the music.
It was like a machine you use
was
to
perfect.
See the film?
Right.
Oh.
I have some of the original footage here. I did that. And then a few years later, which is not long ago, maybe Quentin Tarantino did a movie called Jackie Brown.
Right.
And my wife and I were sitting there looking at the film. And I see my music from Coffee is in it.
Oh,
and
you didn't know?
No, I had no idea. Nobody told me anything.
Oh.
So I said, ooh, if they use this music from Coffee, then I can sue them for using my music illegally.
Exactly.
And what happened is that they had done a deal with Polygram to do the movie. It's no problem. And eventually they sent me a check for the parts that they used.
Okay.
But what it did, it gave me two films in my life.
Right.
Jackie
you
Brown and
Tuesday.
Coffee, right.
That's right.
You know, so I guess she wanted it to be used. It was some exciting scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice.
You mean Pam Grier?
Yes. Yeah, Pam Grier.
Excellent.
The big girl. I said, oh, hi, Pam, how are you? can I just kiss on your cheek? You know, she's got all this.
She's the big girl.
You're right. My God. She's a big girl. That's right. I've really been having fun doing this, you know. Now I'm 72 years old. I don't feel like what 72 is supposed to feel like, at least what I think it's supposed to. And I'm just thankful to God. You know, I'm just able to walk and talk and breathe and enjoy the sunshine and a beautiful day, you know.
You're going to be at the Blue Note, aren't you?
The Blue Note in September for about 6 days. Oh, you know, I was listening to our conversation because you've met some very enlightening people like Reggie Workman. Mm-hmm. You know, and some of my good friends we've talked about tonight. It's interesting because these are people that have really, really inspired me. And it really made me feel very good about myself and about the industry. You know, it's so funny. I remember Reggie Workman telling me, you're going to be all right financially if you could just go through the spirit with Herbie Mann's music. He wasn't talking about the music is different because, you know, Reggie Workman played with John Coltrane.
Right.
It's like, and that is like to have been with John Coltrane or Miles Davis. It's like, that's an incredible. I always wanted to play with Miles Davis, but Miles never called me. Mm. I went by his house, everything, but he never called me. But to me, Miles' music is the epitome of music. And Train and Cannonball and everybody that played with Miles, my God, everybody that played with Miles was a spectacular musician.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
It's incredible.
And for the most part, they came out with their own bands.
That's right.
Once they went through Miles Davis University.
Ooh, that's a heavy cycle. I know that Buddy Montgomery went with Miles as a vibist, not a pianist, and he got on the plane and it made them stop the plane because he was afraid to fly. This is another story.
Buddy Montgomery,
you know, it's kind of a trip. Who is it that doesn't like to fly? A woman. I think it's Aretha Franklin.
Oh, okay.
She doesn't like to fly.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's just interesting. I don't blame them, you know, getting in the air, that feels kind of, oh.
But you do it, though. You do fly.
Oh, girl, I go everywhere.
Yes.
I get on the plane with the pilot. I say, come on, let's go. let's go to this city. It's going to take 18 hours. Can you make it in 60? No, in nearly. I have fun with the crew of the airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
We always have a good time.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, in music, it's about, in life, it's about having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And going through the experiences, you know, the experiences every time. They're all different, but they are similar to the other ones. I enjoy it.
What do you suggest? Do you have any pearls to share for musicians coming into this business?
Oh, man, you know, especially the young musician, it's so important that they keep control of themselves, control of their mind and spirit and body, be careful of substances, you know, substance abuse, alcohol, drugs. These are the things that can tear you down, and you don't even realize it and make you nothing, make you hate yourself.
How about their relationship with their instrument?
Oh, yes, your instrument is like Lucille is to B.B. King. You know, you got to have the most respect for your instrument and respect the instrument and hopefully make the instrument respect you. So it's important for you to stay in control. That's probably one of the hardest things for some musicians to do, stay in control of everything. Because it's not just about the music and the musical instrument. It's about the business of the music. And a lot of people get misinterpretations. But it's always about the business because you are the entity. When they say Roy Ayers, hey, take care of yourself and take care of what you have to do. It's very important for you to stay in control all your life till you die. And even after you die, give all the rest to your family if you have to. And so it's just a lot of things that happen that are passed down, you know. And a lot of people don't do anything about that. No families follow through with their brother or husband or whoever it is. These are serious things that have to be taken care of, and there's a lot of money in it. Ooh, it's just things are ignored from great musicians. I try to tell my wife and my daughter and my son that they have to do certain things after I pass on because this is what happens to people.
Right.
And a lot of people like the Heath family, you know, James M. Toomey.
Yes.
Is their son, you know.
Son, yeah. He's another former Sugar and Mumble guest.
Yeah, you talked to him.
We talked about mine.
He's a very knowledgeable person.
Very knowledgeable in many things.
Right, that's right, right. James M. Toomey, that's right.
Yes.
He played with my band. It's amazing when you think about the people that I've had in my band. I had a band with Chick Corea, Junior Cook, Steve Ellington on drums, Reggie Workman on bass.
Okay.
Oh, my God. That was so fun because we were spacing because Steve Ellington was really an outside drummer. He wasn't all inside.
Uh-huh.
And I think Chick loved it because it was just a new area to go in. Musically, you can play what you play, but what I say outside, he plays outside of the rhythm, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you stop.
Uh-huh.
And the music's still going.
Right.
And you stop. And be like,
and come back in.
Yeah, in and out, in and out, yeah. But different than this concept.
Yeah.
It's interesting because you say, you'd be with them. It's so interesting.
Uh-huh.
It's such an exciting thing to when you go to new areas, creative, innovative areas.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about playing out?
There's a time and a place when you do that.
Uh-huh.
Of course, it really depends on musicians.
Mm-hmm.
If the musicians are tuned in. I played on a gig in Paris with Sonny Murray.
Oh, yeah.
I had never played with Sonny in my life. And was a bass player, a French guy.
Uh-huh.
And myself on vibes.
Trio.
Right.
Okay.
And I think I said, "What you got, Sonny?" And Sonny said, "But and we all just started playing. Just outside, you know.
Uh-huh.
I had no idea what was going to happen, but except that's what happened. I thought they were going to call a tune. But they just called, "Hey, let it ride."
Uh-huh.
So I think it's fun. It's interesting. It's an interesting area to go to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one must, in my case, one must remain aware of this is that way. And this is that way, and this is that way, and there's so many different ways. And so I go wherever it goes,
mm-hmm.
or wherever I choose to go.
From what I've noticed, you can be in these different places
mm-hmm.
if you are confident in your playing.
Yeah, confident, yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
This has happened on gigs with me. I was on a gig with Don Cherry in Los Angeles, and it was a jam session, and a whole bunch of people, and we finished the song. And Don Cherry said, very quietly and coolly in my ear, he said, "Next time you take a solo on this song, play everything a half step higher."
Wow.
Yeah, well, he was, ooh, woo. Well, I said, wow. That means, that's all that was said. And
right.
I said, wow. So I have a lot of people that I've just been attracted to musically, you know, other than the regular inside people, you know, like I'm very attracted to John Coltrane's music and Miles Davis' music.
Right.
And of course, it started off in my career by getting a set of vibraphone mallets from Lionel Hampton at a concert that he was playing in Los Angeles when I was 5 years old. And that has kind of sparked my love for music because Lionel Hampton is the first artist I really appreciate and have appreciated over the years. And I believe he probably is the ultimate musician because everybody, especially the black artists, that he became somebody. Almost everybody in the jazz music field that became famous played with Lionel Hampton.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody, you know. I mean, it's that serious.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Miles, Diaz, you name them.
Yeah.
You know, the early cats in that age bracket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hawkins, Coleman, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You name them. You know, Lionel Hampton was a great drummer also and a great vibist. Wonderful, wonderful vibist.
Is there any vibes now that you've heard?
Yeah, I like this new vibes. It's relatively new. Harris.
Stephon
Harris.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stephon, he's very nice. He's got a great personality.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes along with his smile. And when I saw him, you know, Gerald Wilson told me something early in my years when I was working with him. He said, "Roy, whatever you do, don't lose your smile." But I know what he meant by that,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of events that take place out here in life can hamper your smile. It can affect your smile.
Yeah.
So I meant to tell that to Stephon, because he has such a warm smile. It's so real, so vibrant. But I like his playing. There's another one named Steve. We went to a club. We went to, what's it called, Brody's? Yes, Brody's. And Bobby Hutcherson was there at the club. And Steve Nelson was playing at the club with a trio, vibes, bass, and drum. Light drum. And George Coleman sat in with Steve. And he kind of, I call it bogarted.
Uh-oh.
He was like just telling him what to play and all that. And Bobby said to me, "I don't like that." But I understood what he was talking about. Cause,
you didn't like it either.
Well, the way, but also it was kind of rude.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, I think that George was kind of out there. You know, he's out there. He was just being George.
Okay.
All right, so it was cool.
Uh-huh.
But
like Steve Nelson.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's a good vibist. Very, very nice vibist. And then I asked Bobby, I said, "Let's go up the stage and say hello." And we went up to see him. And he goes, "Oh, hey." That was funny.
Uh-huh.
But that was a great moment.
Who do you vibe with musically, as far as when you're on the bandstand,
mm-hmm.
which instrument do you vibe with?
Probably all of, but sometimes we play songs, and I look at my piano player, Mark Adams, and Mark, he has grown over the years. You know, I didn't realize it until I realized it. Mark's been with me almost 15 years. I said, God, man, when he came with me, he had a braid in the back, one braid in the back of his head, came down to his back here.
To back of his
one
head.
Braid, just one braid straight back,
uh-huh.
One braid. And he got rid of that. Like, it's no longer there. I said, my God, Mark, I remember when you had a braid. He said, oh, wow, you remember that, right? So the key to it, you got to just stay alive, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It helps when you're alive.
Yeah. You absolutely, it really does help. You got to stay alive. But I'm just glad that you took the time out to talk to me.
I'm glad you said yes.
Oh, thank you. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Thank you.
Is there anything else you want to tell the listeners before we wrap up?
Well, I believe that, especially the young musicians, it's a serious adventure being a musician, and you must study hard to be the musician that you know you are or that you can be, and you can make it if you can survive it. I believe that.
It's true.
I believe you can make it if you can survive it and stay in here and
right.
keep pitching.
Right.
Because so many of our people just fall by the wayside,
sure.
You know. But I'm glad you took this time to talk to me and let me express myself to you and the people out there in the radio land. So thank you for interviewing me.
Thank you, Roy Ayers, for saying yes.
You're a sweetheart. Thank you.
You love me.
Yes. Welcome to the wonderful sound of Polly. Ladies, I got you in the mood. For interlude, raw like in the nude. I hope this ain't considered rude, but let's stop talking cause it's feeling like an interview. I know you're into me, so let me get into you. I'm always in the mood for laughing and loving and rapping and passing to relaxing and hitting and ducking and ripping production. These kittens, they muffin. Just because they stuff them in the oven, my words are dripping off the tongue like the wax from a candle wick.
All right, everybody. That's it. We are wrapping it up. This is Sugar in My Bowl. My name is Joyce Jones. I'm in the studio with...
What's your name?
Hank Williams.
And I was chatting it up with Roy Ayers. What a fabulous dude. We are talking over to Lib Kweli from Eardrum. In the Mood with Roy Ayers. You can hear him a little bit. And let's see, before that we heard Running Away from Lifeline. Let me say this now, in case I miss something. The playlist is up on sugarinmybowl.org. SugaInMyBowl.org. Hank Williams has placed, he's putting in the last characters right now.
Typing furiously as we speak.
And before Running Away, we heard Everybody Loves the Sunshine, Roy Ayers Ubiquity. And let's see, before that we heard Mary J. Blige, My Life, sampled liberally from the Puff Diddy production, sampled liberally from Everybody Loves the Sunshine. And let's see, before that we heard, what did we hear? Did we hear A Tear to a Smile?
We had Running Away,
right.
Before that Everybody Loves the Sunshine,
right.
And before that My Life, Mary J. Blige,
right.
And Time and Space
from A Tear to a Smile, that's the one, okay, with Dee Dee Bridgewater on vocals.
And former sugar guest
indeed. And before that we heard Humming, yes, okay. From Roy Ayers Ubiquity. And, tomorrow, this program, if you missed a lot of it, will be available on sugarinmybowl.org in the archive section. In about 10 minutes, it should be up on the WBAI.org section. Hank, you have some announcements to share?
Yes, I do. Very quickly, several former Sugar guests have upcoming shows, and we'll read down a few for you. So, upcoming at the Blue Note, Roy Haynes is there from June 27th to 29th, Andy Bay will be there one night only, Sunday, June 30th. Lakeisha Benjamin will be there one night only on Monday, August 26th. And Roy Ayers, subject to this show, has dates from August 27th to September 1st. And finally, Joe Sample and the Creole Joe Band will stop by from September 10th to 14th. And since I'm going through that at warp speed, you can see bluenote.net for more info. Again, that's bluenote.net. Sugar guest Will Calhoun will have a free concert as part of Jazzmobile, and that is on Wednesday, August 7th, 7 o'clock at Grant's Tomb. You might want to get there early to snag yourself a seat. See jazzmobile.org for more info. Again, that's jazzmobile.org. And finally, be sure to click the link on our site for the Behind the Mic blog for interviews Joyce did from last week's Vision Fest and a good bit more. We have, we're going to try and get much more info up on there. And finally, a reminder that WBAI still needs your help. We're seriously in the woods, so help keep us and everybody else on the air by pledging whatever you can at give2, that's the number 2, WBAI.org. Again, that's give2, the number 2, WBAI.org.
Thank you so much, Hank Williams, for being here tonight.
You're welcome.
Yay.
Thank you.
And thank you, Roy Ayers. Thank you, Jessica Kerr Moore. And it was just today that she provided this recording that will be available on iTunes, I believe she said. Jessica Kerr Moore, the poet and performer. We opened the program with her release. A selection from her release. It will be available either Tuesday or Wednesday on iTunes. And it is called, what is it called again? Give us poems, or we want
you,
poems?
You want poems.
You want poems. And coming up next is La Nueva Alternativa. We're going to go out with Coffee is the Color from the soundtrack of Coffee, Roy Ayers. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
Bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.